Welcome to the Redeemed and Refining Journey, a program designed to tell the uplifting and encouraging stories of our neighbors and fellow believers.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Redeemed and Refining Journey, and this is Katrina Hine, your host. And, you know, this is the holiday season when we really love to get together, and we like to do good things for people, and we maybe give to our favorite charitable organizations, or we help people that, you know, we see out in the community. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But there is a point where we need to kind of stop and look back at how we do our charitable acts and what is the best outcome that we really and truly want to have for these individuals and our organizations that we give to. And so today I have with me two individuals from True Charity Initiative, which is located in Joplin, Missouri. And I have Savannah Alexson, which is the Joplin Area Local Director and Events Coordinator. How are you, Savannah?
I'm good, Katrina. How are you?
I am fine. And then I also have Nathan Mayo, Membership Director with True Charity. How are you, Nathan?
I'm doing well. It's great to be here.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with you, Nathan. If you could give an overview of True Charity and kind of break it down for us in a general terms, and then we'll just get right into the depth of what we are going to talk about today.
Sure. Well, so what we observe when we look at charity in America, and particularly within the church as well, is a lot of people agree at a high level that our charity should be empowering people, right? We should be giving people a hand up, not a handout. We should be teaching people how to fish, all this sort of language people agree with. But the problem is there's a big gap between theory and practice. And if you actually look at our typical program or even charity sometimes as we apply it in our own lives, it really looks a lot like throwing fish at people. So the True Charity Initiative exists to help people bridge that gap. And we were actually inspired from the Ministry of Watered Gardens, and our director, James Whitford, did charity for 20 years, realized at some point in that process that he and his wife had a heart for the poor, but not a mind for the poor. Mm-hmm. And what they were doing wasn't very effective. So they mm-hmm. did some program redesign. They incorporated some principles that were better, and they started to see much better results. And while we understand that poverty is complex and there's no one answer that we can just give you and you go put it into practice, we do think that some models are better than others. And so the basic premises that we have from that experience of James and Marcia and others is that effective charity, true charity, is three things. So it has to be voluntarily resourced by people who care. It has to be challenge-oriented such that clients are being empowered to be a part of their own solutions through relationship and accountability. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be outcome driven. We need to measure what we're trying to achieve and make sure it's actually happening. And so we exist as an organization to champion these principles, to champion a national movement of voluntarily resourced effective charity at the most local level. And we work in three different ways. So the first thing we do is we help improve charity mm-hmm. by working with practitioners. We give them a bundle of tools and training and resources and consultation through the True Charity Network. That's for both churches and nonprofits to help them put better principles into practice and also connect and network with each other better. We influence policy by connecting the experiences of those nonprofits, those doers, with policymakers at the state and national level so that they can understand what's really going on the ground. And finally, we inform the general public by just teaching people through trainings, through our annual summit, through other events. We help regular folks understand what effective charity looks like and how they can support that.
Well, and I think that's really important because, you know, there are so many well-meaning people and Christians and non-Christians alike that we truly want to help individuals improve their quality of life, but sometimes we aren't quite sure what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So Savannah, could you kind of talk about some of the things that you guys, that you really truly work on? And I know some of the things that we talked about before, and I thought it was interesting because I think it was you that said something about subsidizing their misery. Mm. Well, but we don't understand. I mean, if I give somebody money every day because I see them out at the corner with a sign, am I really helping that person?
Right.
So could you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. So the True Charity Initiative is all about effective compassion. How do we take this compassion that we feel in our hearts that is a good thing, that is reflective of God's nature in us? How do we take that good feeling and temper it with the wisdom in our minds so that we make sure that we're truly helping people, that we're empowering them to live a flourishing life, a life where they get to practice the skills that they've been given, that they can put their talents to work, that they can demonstrate their capacities to others, and in that way make our world a better place and provide for their families. That's the kind of thing, that's the path we want to pave for people. And a lot of times, unintentionally, when we don't examine our good intentions, when we don't examine the effects of what it is that we do, again, out of a good heart, out of compassion, when we don't examine that, we can unintentionally hurt people. We can, as you were saying earlier, we can subsidize their misery so that they aren't living that flourishing life. They're stuck in a rut. And as compassionate people, as people who care for others, we certainly don't want to leave people in that rut. We want to leverage them out of their poverty, and we want to help them become the protagonist in their own story of development.
Oh, I like that. Their own story of their development. I really like that. I mean, you know, especially when you say development, because that means that there is some progression in their life and that it gets better and better because mm-hmm. we've been helping them, we've been giving them the tools that they need and the things that they need to actually incrementally improve their life.
Yes, and important to remember that too, is that they are the protagonist in the story. So it's not us. Of course, we can come alongside and help. And again, as Christians, I think that's a really important part of our role, is to come alongside, to walk with people who are experiencing poverty, to make their journey a little bit easier. But ultimately, at the end of the day, for someone to experience a truly flourishing life, they've got to be the hero in their own story. And so we want to give them the tools to be that hero.
That's cool. Well, Nathan, and you were telling me you've got an economics degree or something?
Yeah, that's my background.
So you like numbers and stuff.
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I like to think about, you know, the way we set up incentives.
Uh-huh.
And let's perhaps you get more of what you subsidize. So when we subsidize misery, we tend to get more of it in poverty.
Mm.
But when we subsidize and empower people to improve their situation, when we subsidize work, we make that a relatively easier thing rather than just poverty, then you get more work, you get more improvement of situations.
You were telling me how much our nation has spent on this problem of poverty. I was just floored by the amount of money. Could you?
Yeah, so up until the 1960s, the poverty rate was declining pretty rapidly after World War II. And about 1964, I believe, is when the war on poverty began. And since that time, spending has ballooned. We spent about $22 trillion at the, I believe, federal and state level on alleviating poverty. At this point, that's about $1 trillion a year. And the poverty rate has not budged. 15% based on the federal poverty line, that is where the poverty rate has stayed. It actually stopped falling when the war on poverty started, and it has flatlined ever since.
That's not good. And you know, I think a lot of people might be surprised by that information because, you know, we understand that during the war after the Great Depression, there was a lot of problems and a lot of people went hungry and lost their homes and their jobs, and not too much unlike what we're going through now. But it was kind of a different time. And, you know, I think that we truly need to get back to how we are treating people. And we had this discussion before. Savannah, do you want to kind of talk about, we are really truly called to meet people's needs at a very deep level. And you were talking about this earlier. Do you want to kind of continue that discussion in here about that?
Well, sure. Yeah. If we're going to address poverty in a way that is sustainable, in a way that really makes a long-term impact, then we've got to get to the core of people's problems. And that's essentially the difference between relief kinds of charity and development kinds of charity. And so relief, as you may know, that it's charity that's primarily focused on helping someone after a true crisis has happened. So helping them reach that level of stability. And so you can think of things like the tornado that we had in Joplin. Mm-hmm. In the wake of that tornado, it was necessary that there was some level of relief, just no strings attached, just a distinct provider-receiver dynamic for people. But relief ought to be very short-lived, temporary and rare, and only in real, true crisis situations. Mm-hmm. Now, contrast that with development, which looks at people more holistically and looks at their deep-rooted issues and says, how can we help you overall achieve a better life, not just economically, but spiritually, emotionally, mentally? How can we make sure that you are thriving in every way possible? And so there are different modes of development that can move people closer to that threshold of really living a flourishing life. And so we want to focus a little more on the development side, particularly here in the States. Overwhelmingly, the needs are for development. And yet, by and large, the charity that is practiced here is relief. And so when we misaddress people's true needs and therefore give the wrong intervention, then we hurt people. Mm-hmm. To be frank with you, we inevitably, what ends up happening is we sort of treat people like animals. Like if an animal is hungry, you take that animal to the trough to feed them. If an animal is cold, you put them in the barn. Well, people aren't like that. Of course, we have material needs. We've got physical needs, and they are important, but they are one singular part of the whole of who the human person is. And if we aren't addressing those deep existential needs that a person has, mm-hmm. we will end up hurting them by just addressing surface needs.
So I think it's very important, and what I hear you saying is that we recognize that we are all created in the image of God, and He made us uniquely in different ways. We're all gifted, but we all have value, and sometimes the way that we try to help people maybe don't recognize the value of them as a created being by an almighty God. And so some of the things that you actually work with organizations and individuals to help them maybe look at ways they can kind of change and refocus how they do their good works or their charity. And I know that you have something called the True Charity Network. And Nathan, I kind of wanted you to talk about that a little bit, because that is something that a lot of people, organizations, churches can kind of connect to. And it sounds like it's got a lot of value in working with these folks to kind of refocus how they do their charity.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of tremendous books out there that discuss poverty at a high level and good solutions at a high level, kind of like we're doing now. But what we observed is that so many people would listen to a great speaker talk about this for half an hour, and then everybody in the audience just raises their hand and says, but how do we put this into practice at our organization? Mm-hmm. And practical tools are really what we see people crying out for. So that's what we created the True Charity Network to do, just to help both churches as well as other nonprofits amplify their impact by giving them tools that help them learn, connect with others, and influence the broader system. So we give people training and consultation so that they can apply these principles at their level. We'll talk you through your programs. What does this look like applied to what you do? And a bundle of online tools, video trainings, as well as in-person kind of trainings. And then we help people connect together through sharing stories, through an e-publication, through an annual summit that we invite members to network at. And we ultimately give people a way to influence the broader system by connecting the experiences, the voices of those charity practitioners to policymakers by taking those stories from one and bringing them to another. So that's what the True Charity Network does in a nutshell. And we're all about ministering to the ministers, giving people the practical tools to put effective charity into practice at their own organization.
And I know one of the things that we had talked about beforehand was the fact that there is kind of a disconnect in the understanding of what really is happening on the ground, and at maybe at a state level, or maybe, I don't know, at a local level, but for sure at the state and federal level, what people are understanding about the challenges that some of these individuals in poverty are really and truly encountering. And then some of the problems, you know, dare I say, I'm going to say it anyway, that some people are taking advantage of the system. And there's a lot of disconnect on those real stories, making it to the people that do the policy. So how do you guys help with that?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I read study that was produced by the government that said food stamp fraud was basically non-existent. Less than 1% of food stamp dollars went to fraud. And then I've just talked with so many people around the mission and our long-term recovery program that are like, ha, food stamp fraud was how I paid the bills. You know, it's like, there's a disconnect here. And of course, that non-existent number came from the government that audited itself to tell us that its program was working very effectively. So as far as how we actually influence, we do that in two ways. So one is working through principled advocates who already have connections to lawmakers. So we take the stories of members and we bring them to them, because they said it's amazing how much a story can make a difference, especially at the state level. I've been told that a lot of time legislators really, they were elected because they had opinions on just a few issues, and on all other issues, they're kind of open to what people have to say to them. And normally your regular folks are not spending time hanging out in the state capitol or the national capitol because they're busy. You have things to do. But we can take those experiences there. The other thing we do is we just write about it in national forums. Both Savannah and I have recently had pieces published in national outlets. One of the ones I wrote was responding to a study that said basically if you give homeless people a bunch of cash, they'll get out of homelessness. And to make a long story short, what really went on inside the study is they screened out 90% of homeless people. And they were honest about it. And they were only doing this to a very high functioning subset. But then the way the media interpreted the study is they said, oh, you should give money to panhandlers. Well, the problem is that's a very relatively low performing subset of the homeless, where something like 90% of panhandlers have drug and alcohol issues. So you had an instance where, all right, something is true. If you give cash to people who are in a very temporary situation, they might get out of it. But then people were applying it in a way that wasn't true at all. Oh, give money to panhandlers. And so it was just obvious that this is wrong. But yet it was reported in probably 20 national outlets that, oh, wow, this is true. So just one voice back into the national debate. Just to, you know, I was able to break down that study and get a piece published in Real Clear Policy and just explain, that's not actually what went on. Just go read the study. And so that's another way that our members inspire us with their own experiences and their own knowledge to feed back into that national discussion and make sure that the voices of the doers are not altogether lost from the discussion of the policy.
I like that. And I truly am one of those kinds of people that believes in the groundwork that we do is so important, and it requires people to get dirty. And I don't mean by dirty, well, it could be physically dirty, get your hands physically dirty, but it's also in, we don't want to leave our house, we don't want to leave the walls of our church sometimes, and one of the right ways to help people is doing just that. So Savannah, could you talk about that a little bit and how you guys work on that?
Certainly, yeah. You know, Nathan mentioned earlier, and I think he did well pointing this out, that there is no silver bullet for ending poverty. There is no panacea. And we've tried a whole lot of different things, a whole lot of blanket solutions, and they haven't worked. And that's because when you get down to it, poverty is fundamentally a complex issue, because people are complex. We have different needs, we have different situations, different contexts. And so because of that, we have to have individualized, tailored approaches. And that's why the most localized form of compassion generally is also the most effective kind of compassion. And it's also one of the reasons why we at True Charity are big advocates for relationships with people, particularly because, as Brian Fickert and Steve Corbett, they aptly point out in their book, When Helping Hurts, that a lot of poverty is rooted in broken relationships of different kinds, but relationships with critical people in their lives is one of those areas that can really set people on a negative trajectory in their lives, because they have relationships that are not functioning the way that they should be. And so this is a great opportunity for the church, for compassionate people, to step into this void where people are isolated, where they don't have those crucial relationships, and they can fill in. They can be a friend to someone who needs it. They can walk with someone out of poverty. And so I think that's a great first step, and also a great first step for discerning what a person's true need is. You know, we talked about, how can you know if somebody needs relief or development? Well, one great way to know is to know the person. Mm-hmm. Who's more likely to know if someone is in a crisis, the person's mother or the federal government? Well, undoubtedly, it's the person's mother. And so as much as possible, whenever we can, we want to enter into relationships with people. And that's the kind of generosity with our time, sacrifice, where we're willing to make time in our schedules to meet with people who need those relationships. That's where we can make that really long-lasting impact for people and move them more towards development.
Well, and I think that's so important. You know, I have worked in the social work realm, and truly, a lot of people just really need someone to sit down and listen to their story and find out how that story impacts how they have developed into their situation. And sometimes, you know, it's the simplest, easiest, most wonderful thing to do is just to sit down and listen to someone, and you get a better sense of what they need than, and I've done this, I'm guilty, I'm going to tell you that right now, but there's been instances where someone has been on the corner and I feel really bad and I just roll down the window and hand them some money, but then I don't ask them their name. Is there a way I can pray for you? I don't ever ask those things. And what you're saying is fundamentally people are broken spiritually, and they really need to know that they have value. And so that's an excellent point that you just made. And I am so happy that you made it, because I was thinking, I've done some of the stuff she's talking about.
Well, you know what? A lot of people have, with a lot of compassion brimming in their hearts. They've made mistakes with their charity. But that doesn't mean we can't get better looking toward the future and making sure that the interventions that we choose are the most likely solutions to help people escape their poverty.
So how does True Charity help individuals and, of course, organizations? We kind of touched on that a little bit, but how does True Charity work to kind of turn this around so it's not toxic charity anymore? It's actually very caring, but it's also going to help these people maybe achieve something they never dreamed of achieving in their life. So what do you do?
Well, I think it again comes back to these three pillars of True Charity. How do we move away from this toxic kind of relief-oriented cyclical forms of charity towards more development that's more long-term oriented, that is sustainable? And we believe that the best way to accomplish that is through charity that is voluntarily resourced. It springs out of a heart of compassion. It's localized. It's through challenge. It's through helping people become the best version of themselves. And as we know, everything that we've ever accomplished in our lives that we've been proud of, that's been born out of challenge, because challenge develops. When we experience an obstacle and we overcome it, there's a sense of pride in that, and we grow from it. And so we don't want to insulate the poor from that experience, because that's an important part of being human, is getting to experience manageable challenge and learning how to overcome it. And then finally, we want to make sure that our charity is also outcomes driven. We want to make sure that we're not just measuring our success based on how much stuff we give out, because when you get right down to it, how many bowls of soup you gave out, how many nights of shelter you provided, that doesn't tell you anything about the difference that you made in someone's life. We want to know if we're making a real difference. Are we helping people find employment? Are we helping them find stable housing? Are people getting educated? Those are the kinds of things we want to measure. And so when someone can look at their charity or look at their organization and say, hey, we are voluntarily resourced. Our community is pitching in to provide for this. We are challenge oriented. We're helping people develop through challenge. And we are outcomes driven. We're helping people make a real difference in their lives, and we can measure it. I can show you. It's right here on paper. That's when we know we've moved from toxic charity to a more empowering kind of charity.
So you have something called True Charity University. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, certainly. True Charity University, I think, is a great way for individuals to get plugged in. So that's just our online educational platform. It's the 7 marks of effective charity, which we have borrowed with permission from Marvin Olasky and adapted them somewhat. And so, again, this is just a great way for individuals who are wanting to learn more about how to practice effective charity. What does this look like in the day-to-day? I'd highly recommend that. You can do it it from the comfort of your own home. Just log in. Right now we've got, I believe it's the first two courses are free and the other five are just $5 a piece. And we even have some group bundles. So if this is something you'd like to do with your church or something that you'd like to do with the nonprofit you volunteer at, we could certainly help you with that as well.
That's also something that we include with membership for True Charity Network members.
Oh, okay.
So that's a resource that's available to organizations that work with us.
Okay. Well, so I believe you were telling me, too, that you also have an event in May. Mm-hmm. What's that look like?
Yeah, so that's our True Charity Summit. And again, highly recommend this for anyone who's involved in the charity space, whether that's as a nonprofit worker or a church benevolence volunteer, or even as an individual who's interested. We'd highly recommend that you come and join us there. So that's going to take place Tuesday and Wednesday, May 18th and 19th, 2021. It's going to be at Missouri Southern. And we're just going to be gathering leaders from across the nation talking about what does effective charity look like. And we're going to have people there who are not just talking the talk, but who are walking the walk, so we can learn how to put these models of effective charity into place at our own organizations. And so our theme is reclaiming justice. Justice is always a hot topic. So we're going to be talking about what does justice look like for the poor and how can we help them get there. So again, highly recommend that you come to that. And if you'd like to learn more, we have more information available at truecharity.us about how you can get signed up.
Okay, excellent. So before we wind up, do you have anything you would like to add, Nathan?
Well, I'll just say that everything that's important in life, we expect to have to educate ourselves about. You know, you don't go to a church and expect the pastor has never done any biblical education before he teaches a sermon, right? So if we're going to run nonprofits, if we're going to fulfill the command that Jesus called us to be compassionate, it's worth taking the time to educate ourselves about how to do it effectively. That's a very important thing.
Well, and I would agree with that, you know, because I think that we just kind of take some of that and say, okay, if I throw money at it, that's good. Well, not necessarily. We want to do it the right way. We want it to mean something and have lasting effect and impact on people's lives, and that is so important. I know that right now is kind of a tough time for a lot of people, but what we're talking about today is so important. And we want to be able to do this right, because after all, we are designed for so much more. God intended for each and every one of His creation, us, to do something wonderful for His glory and for His people. And so as we get ready to finish with this one more time, would one of you please give the information on how to find out more, contact you all if somebody wants to contact you to find out more about the True Charity Network or about some of the events that you're going to have or even the university. So how can folks find out about that?
People can find all that through our website, truecharity.us. Mm-hmm. All of the network, summit, university information is all there on that website. We love for people to check it out. Follow us on Facebook. Keep up with what we're doing. And we want to be a part of a national movement to really make a difference in what charity looks like in this country and especially in our churches.
Excellent. I'm so glad that you guys came to kind of share some of these truths with us today. And I hope that all the listeners got some valuable information. And I really encourage you to check out True Charity because, you know, they're really trying to impact not just our local organizations. They really would like to reach out into other states, other communities, and expand. It'd be awesome if we could figure this out on a national level. We could do so many great things. So for Katrina Hine and the Redeemed and Refining Journey, I hope you have a wonderful weekend and be blessed.
This concludes this week's edition of the Redeemed and Refining Journey. We hope today's discussion inspires you through life's valleys and encourages you to step out in faith and follow God's plan for your life. Join us next week as we hear another story of God's faithfulness on the Redeemed and Refining Journey.